There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We generally tend to think of the decisions made in the secular world as isolated from how religious people think. We have a very privatized view of religion. Even in a country as strongly influenced by a Christian ethos or a Christian worldview as the United States, we generally tend to separate those things. So when we talk about something like how children are treated in society, and can we even raise that subject without considering the travesty, the tragedy, the ongoing Holocaust that is abortion in the United States, does that have its roots in some way in a change in how we have thought religiously about children, how we have thought theologically about children? Does it have some bearing on how central we believe the fact that Jesus Christ, in fact, became man, became a child in the womb? Does it have something to do with that as well? Joining us for the next half hour to talk about the incarnation, children, and abortion, Dr. David Scare. He's professor and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of an article in the latest Concordia Theological Quarterly titled Abortion, Incarnation, and the Place of Children in the Church, All One Cloth. Dr. Scare, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. It's good being back with you again, Todd. It's been a little time.
You have written these words, secular and religious events are woven into one cloth or mixed into one cocktail. What do you mean by those words with respect to abortion in our society?
Well, in this way, if the views in the public had not changed on abortion, they would have had no effect on the church. But insofar as the views in society have changed on abortion, our people are more likely to think that it is a proper procedure that has no moral or ethical consequences. And it reflects the waning influence. The relationship between the church and society goes both ways. For a long time, the church has had strong influence in how society felt. But now the tables are turned. The current is flowing in the other direction. And nobody is immune from this at all. All of us are subject to it.
There's also kind of settled in a consensus, especially now what we're talking about, a full generation, really, 41 years and counting, since the Supreme Court's decision in 1973, Roe v. Wade, a general kind of religious consensus that, you know, the church needs to engage in some kind of action on this, but we are still 40 years down the line, especially among Lutherans, ambivalent about political action when it comes to the protection of the unborn. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me just tell you this. Our pastor in the Poconos, a member in that church, says he makes a visit on people whether they want to see him or not. And I think that's a parable of what the church should do in society. The church, whether society wants to hear what the church has to say is beside the point. The church has an obligation to address certain moral and ethical issues in society. That doesn't mean that we're going to succeed, but the church has a vested interest in certain institutions.
Now, you write that the 1973 decision came out of the blue like a thunderbolt, and part of it, you suggest, part of what may have contributed to it was the church's belief that something like this could never happen or would never happen. Expand on that.
Well, I must say, I probably in the essay expressed my own emotions in that regard. Before that time, I had no awareness of how where I guess I knew abortions were taking place. I haven't really given any thought to it, and I thought this was a slam dunk for the Supreme Court that they would say it's not constitutional to have an abortion. And I don't think I was the only one, because the decision was based on privacy. Now, that's a very unusual concept, because does that mean if I do it and nobody else knows it? So I guess at that time, I was not willing to accept that society had changed, had vastly changed. And that is, we had already had the Kent University shootings. We already had student walkouts and riots on various campuses. And so the fiber that had held society together, at least up through the 1950s, had begun to disintegrate. And I suppose if divorce, no-fault divorce, was legal and possible, then I guess the next step was, well, maybe various parts of the family were also could be dissolved.
You even tell the story about, you know, where you were on January 22nd.
Yeah.
Hearing this. Tell us that story.
I was sitting... The seminary was located in Springfield, Illinois, and the way I don't know if you're acquainted with that campus. I visited again last October. I was there 10 years as an instructor, and the faculty offices were opposite the classrooms, so there was more commerce between student and professor. And when that happened, Jim Bauer, now a pastor in the Denver area, stopped by, and I was simply stunned by this. And what are you going to do? I mean, we were like a fire bell in the night. There was, where do you go? What do you do with something like this? Yes, I remember it very well. Remember the weather, remember the time, remember everything about it. It was a share. Of course, then at that time, my son, Peter Scare, has taken up a very active role in that, more than I have. But if you can remember, that was happened to be exactly 12 months before the difficulties on the St. Louis faculty, Concordia Seminary St. Louis. And so a lot of our energies were devoted to the synodical issues, synodical problems. Yes, I remember it very well.
You write that we might have been a little slow, Lutherans, confessional Lutherans, might have been a little slow to respond because of our distraction with our internal affairs, as you just mentioned. The Roman Catholics, of course, seemed ready for it. What did they know? What do you think they realized that we didn't realize? They seem to have seen this coming and have really been in a lot of ways a bulwark in society behind which we have sometimes even hidden when it comes to this issue.
I'm not so sure that they were any more prepared than we are. Now, the president of the Synod at that time was the late Dr. J.E.L. Preuss, great guy. Now, I never had a discussion with him. It seems as, maybe I even wrote about that. It seems as if I tried to get him on the phone. My reference there was that the Catholic Church is better equipped to speak on these particular issues than the Lutheran Church is. And it may be because of our polity that the president is a representative of the synod, which is the convention. Well, in the Roman Church, the bishop takes precedence. And I think the same thing is true in our congregations. Pastors do not feel that they can take positions on various items unless they have the authorization, prior consultation, with the elders or with the congregation. That's what I think is at fault. And such a viewpoint is certainly against the whole prophetic outlook of the Old Testament, I guess. The prophets never never inquired of the people whether they liked what they were what the prophets were going to say. That's what my comment was. The Catholics were coming out on that very day, and you didn't have to be a genius to make a statement on that particular point. It took no great literary or theological depth to write a statement that you were opposed to abortion, that it was against the Bible, Christianity, and so forth. I mean, that was not it. It's just we are not so set up to take positions. Now, the present incumbent in that office in the Missouri Senate, Dr. Matthew Harrison, is a little bit more forthright in taking positions, and that's certainly within the purview of the office which he holds, that he should express himself that way. And I don't know why we are so hesitant. We might be hesitant because we say that the chief article of Christianity is the article on justification by faith, which is a kind of a private thing. And therefore, we have no obligation, or we don't have our obligation to the world is somewhat curtailed. In regard to these children, they have absolutely no advocates. They are at the mercy of the mother who wants to abort them. And it's horrendous. But I see that, according to the paper today, that abortions have reached an all-time low. So it's better if fewer die than more die. Let's put it like that. And it's really because the churches have led. Of course, they're non-Christians who are involved, and that's great. We got to all work together. But it's really been the church that has made a difference, and they've made a difference because they worked to lower the age or the period of gestation period in the womb when an abortion can be done. They've also, it's amazing how many states have very strict rules curtailing the practice of abortion. And it's because of the church. And the other thing, which it's kind of an amusing thing, is that it's the non-church world, the scientific world, that has demonstrated that children, long before they are born, are intellectual and emotional beings. And, well, if they're emotional, intellectual beings, well, they're human beings, because what is a human being? I mean, somebody, even an atheist would have to think, well, a human being thinks in a sense that an animal doesn't. So there are a lot of positive signs.
Let's take a break. Dr. David Scare is our guest. We're talking about incarnation, children, and abortion on this Monday afternoon, February the 3rd. He's professor and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
The world likes rock and roll, and so do we. But in the ACELC, we believe pastors are to give us what we need, not what's on our playlists. If that interests you, then visit acelc.net to register for Christ for Us in the Office of the Holy Ministry, our next conference in Cedar Falls, Iowa, February 25th through 27th. And yeah, we're hoping it won't be long before you visit us at acelc.net.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. David Scarer is our guest. We're talking about incarnation, children, and abortion. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will join us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson in Acts chapter 9, talking about this woman of faith, Dorcas. And then, picking up on something Dr. Scarrett just mentioned a moment ago, the weekend's papers brought us news of the lowest abortion rate in recent years. We're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about a new study on ultrasound and abortion. Sarah Foster, president of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C., will be our guest in the last 15 minutes. Of Issues, etc. Dr. Scarer, you cite in your article the late Father Richard John Newhouse as an example of kind of that voice in the public square as it ought to be. What about his activity there, his advocacy for life, do you find remarkable?
Well, I find his life remarkable in several ways, and that is he gets involved in the civil rights movement in New York, and he deliberately arranges to have a call to St. John's the Evangelist Lutheran Church in Brooklyn, and mostly an Afro-American church, as I understand it. And he finds out that his parishioners and the community of which he is a part, that they are offering their children up to abortion. This makes this is a convergent moment in his life because he sees this in almost racist terms. That is, the black community is the one that is suffering most of all, and so he does a U-turn in his life. He's not simply a radical opposing society. He is a radical opposing one particular aspect of life, not only with getting full rights for all citizens of the United States, but full rights for children, not just rights to as citizens of the United States, but a right to have life. And nobody really has taken his place. He had a place in city government, state government, national government. His work transcended many denominations. Brought up as a Lutheran, the son of a Lutheran pastor, an ordained Lutheran pastor, he became a Roman Catholic, and in that position, he had wide access across many political and churchly spheres. It's kind of a remarkable story, at least in my estimation it is. He's been gone now. He's been dead for about, four years, yes. And nobody, I don't see there's any person that has filled his shoes.
In my many conversations with him, one of the eye-opening things for me in kind of clarifying my thinking about abortion as opposed to other issues upon which the church ought to speak, he said, look, abortion is simply, as a moral issue and as a theological issue, if you could divide it that way, of a different caliber than other issues upon which the church must speak. It sets abortion as a higher priority for the church's voice in the public square than any other issue of a moral character. And he would even lay that alongside the death penalty. As a Roman Catholic, he would have said it's of a higher caliber and therefore of a higher priority. What are your thoughts there, Dr. Scarr?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I knew him as a student. We didn't agree on all the issues, but as the time passed on, that's why his loss is so great. We definitely agreed, and that is, when it comes to the death penalty, the person who receives the sentence of death from the judge has all sorts of appeals, and the government will even support these appeals through attorneys, through judges, through congressmen. The child who was aborted has absolutely no defense. He has nobody to speak out in his or her behalf. And, I think it definitely is an anti-feminist thing. And that is, girl babies are more likely to be aborted than boys. This is happening wholesale in China now, and of course they've disrupted the balance of male to female in a kind of drastic way. Heaven knows what's going to happen from this. But I feel the same way. I had given no thought to abortion until the Supreme Court came out 41 years ago, January 1970. I never even thought about it. I don't think I ever preached on it. I know I never preached on it. I never wrote about it. But all of a sudden, it was clear in my vision of what this had to be.
How have Lutheran theologians traditionally looked at the life in the womb? Could you summarize that for us?
That's a very strange point, and that is, I think for the most part, we would agree that would have life, but we have tended to look at the life of infants, either before or after they're born, as being slightly subhuman, saying that they're not intellectual at all. I totally disagree with that. They are full human beings, and they are full members of the church. See, the question comes up, what age will children be in the resurrection? Will they become like adults? Well, the answer is we'll all become like children. And I think this question about age should no longer be part of the church discussion. That is, we shouldn't talk about adult baptism. We shouldn't talk about infant baptism. We'll just talk about baptism, which is for everybody. And a fourth-year student, that about a month ago, he and his wife had a miscarriage, and that he's very depressed. Now, isn't that amazing? When there's a miscarriage, the parents are depressed because they know it's a real loss of a real child. It extends that. We have to do good unto all people. And I certainly agree with Richard John Newhouse that the mantle of our kindness must be extended over these unborn children.
Dr. Scarr, before we let you go, you served there as professor and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary there in Fort Wayne. With about 30 seconds, why should a man who's listening to us right now consider training for the pastoral ministry there in Fort Wayne?
I'll tell you why. Because there is no profession which is more valuable to the person who holds it and for other people in the office of the ministry. It is something that becomes part of you. It is your life. It is something that is so wonderful that you never want to run away from it. It isn't something you take a vacation from. It's not something you take days off from it, because you're always thinking about the scriptures. You're always concerned about people. It is the most self-satisfying and self-sacrificing profession that there is, because you live for other people. You don't live for others. And yesterday was the Super Bowl. Now that the day, and we heard about all the security that was there and the price of the hotel rooms and the special activities that were going on in New York City and in Times Square, after it's all over, what does that mean It doesn't mean too much. But what the minister has to say about Christ and salvation, that lasts, that's good, that's valid now, and it lasts for all eternity, because those who hear the message will share in the glories of Christ.
Folks, if you've ever considered the vocation of pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their toll-free number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Dr. David Scare is professor and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of an article in the latest Concordia Theological Quarterly titled Abortion, Incarnation, and the Place of Children in the Church, All One Cloth. Dr. Scare, thanks for being our guest.
It's my pleasure. Have a good day.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker will join us. We'll teach a Sunday school lesson on Dorcas in Acts chapter 9. Then Sarah and Foster will join us. We'll talk about that newly reported lowered number of abortions since the 1970s. She's president of Feminists for Life based in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.